Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you very much for coming to this talk at 12 o'clock and skipping lunch. I promise you this talk is going to be much better than the lunch we have had at the conference. Lunch is late today? Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't know that they had then postponed lunch for this talk, which is, again, a very nice thing for the conference people to organize. I was thinking about this talk, you know, as in terms of timings. It's like 12 o'clock. Who's going to come? Like, how many people are going to come? But it looks like there are a lot of people in the audience today who love Entity Framework, so which is good to see, which is pretty awesome. So let's get started. I'm going to sort of introduce myself and introduce you to the agenda for today. And if you all agree to it, then we'll sort of continue for the next 75 minutes around Entity Framework. This talk is titled Entity Framework Now and Later. The code is DevB332, and my name is Pranav Rastogi. So just make sure you're in here for the correct talk. So a little bit about myself. My name is Pranav Rastogi, and I'm a program manager on the ASP.NET team. I've been with the team for the last 7 years. I've worked in ASP.NET Web Forms, MVC, SignalR, ASP.NET Core, and more recently for the last year in VS 2013, I was responsible for the file new project experience. So if you've seen the one ASP.NET dialogue, and I was also responsible for releasing the ASP.NET identity system. It's a new membership system that we released with 2013, and it's based on Entity Framework for SQL Server, but you can customize the profile as well. So that's what I've been working on with the team for the last 7 years. When I started with the List View Control, which shipped in .NET Framework 3.5 SP1. So I kind of go back in the days. My accent is going to be a little different. Like, I'm of Indian origin, so I'll try to speak slowly. If you have any questions or you're not following what I'm speaking, then please do raise your hand and just let me know. There are people in the back with mics who will come to your place as well. This picture over here is something I took recently this year where I was climbing in Washington, in Seattle, and it was snowing. It was not snowing over there, but there was all snow around. And when I uploaded this picture and I stored it in Google Drive, like, Google ran some algorithms and decided it had to snow because there was snow on the ground. So that's some post-processing done automatically by Google. I was very surprised when I saw it. But that's what I like to do nowadays, is sort of go and climb quite a lot. So that's about me. For today, this is what the agenda is going to be. We are going to look at Entity Framework, you know, what's happening since the last few releases, what's happening with Entity Framework 6, and what's coming up next. We're going to see a few of these features in action. We are not going to be able to cover all the features of EF6, but it should give you an idea of the feature set that we have. Then we're going to talk about EF7. Like, what is EF7? Where are we heading down with this product? What does it mean to you? How do I change my apps that were written in EF6 to now work on EF7? And should I be doing that? And should I not be doing it? So we'll talk about all of these things. And we'll see some of these EF7 features in action as well. So my whole goal behind this talk is to give you a feel of where we are with EF6 and where we are heading down with EF7. And that's what the message I want to give you. This talk is a level 300 talk. I'm going to start with a basic EF 101 introduction and start building upon these concepts. So does this agenda work for everyone, or is there something else people wanted to see in this talk as well? Are folks using EF6 right now? Okay, so it's about 60% of the audience is using EF6. So it'll be good. Like, then I'll set the tone for EF6 with a basic EF 101 demo and start building on the feature sets that we have. So just a little bit of, you know, a historical setting. We started with Entity Framework 4, which was released with .NET Framework and Visual Studio. And Entity Framework used to ship in band with the framework and Visual Studio itself. Then we released Entity Framework 4.1, which is where code first was introduced, and Entity Framework started shipping out of band as a NuGet package. Now, Entity Framework 4.1 and 5 was an era where part of EF was shipped as a NuGet package, and part of EF was still in the .NET framework. So some of the types were still coming from the .NET framework itself. Starting with Entity Framework 6 was the first release when EF was shipped completely out of band as a self-contained NuGet package. So it had no dependency on it, on a framework, and it was not shipping any types with the .NET framework itself. So that was a big change for Entity Framework, where you know, lots of types were moved from the framework to a Entity Framework DLL, and then people had to upgrade their application itself. As part of this out-of-band release for EF6, we also started releasing the EF6 tooling as an out-of-band installer that you could download from the Microsoft Download Center. And we put this tooling in Visual Studio itself. So each major release of Visual Studio 2013 has the EF tooling integrated. So if you remember, we used to ship the EF Power Tools as an extension in Visual Studio. And one of the feedback that we heard was it was very hard to discover the Power Tools and the features around it. So we have consolidated all that tooling that we had in EF Power Tools, and we ship those tools as part of Visual Studio. So if you install 2013 and any update of 2013, you will get the tooling as well. And so continuing on EF6, we had EF6, which we released. Then we released 6.1.2 is the last release that we did, which is also a NuGet package. And we are now working both on Entity Framework 7 and Entity Framework 6. And I'm going to be talking to you about these upcoming changes in EF7 in this particular talk. So this is a quick snapshot of the features. You know, EF6 was a big major release. Lots of features, completely out of band. Lots of community contributions. 6.1, there were smaller features, like there was the index attribute that was introduced. Lots of bug fixes, and the lots of community contributions that went into this release as well. Then we had 6.1.1, which was a patch release. Again, we fixed lots of bugs. We took a lot of community contributions in this release itself. So let's look at some of the demos. What I have on my machine is a Visual Studio 2013 update for RC. But I'm going to be mostly installing NuGet packages, so you can try it out as well. So I'm going to create a new console application. And I'm going to install the Entity Framework NuGet package. So I'm using the NuGet Package Manager console. You can also install it through right-clicking the project and saying Manage NuGet Packages and installing the NuGet package. So this package brings in the Entity Framework DLLs into your project. A point worth mentioning is if you were referencing the data types from the framework like System Data Entity, this package runs a PowerShell script that removes that reference and adds the reference to Entity Framework, because starting EF6, all the types for Entity Framework are in this DLL called Entity Framework. And so you don't need a reference to the framework itself. So this added the Entity Framework package. And I'm going to create a simple model. So let me create a blog over here. And so what I've done is I've created a simple POCO model, which is following Entity Framework code first paradigm, where I can represent my model as plain old C# objects. And then I can define, like, this blog has an int ID. It has a primary key called blog ID. And so this is Entity Framework code first conventions. And you can override conventions by having your own mappings in your project itself. Let's add a DB context as well. So I'm going to say public class blogging context. And so this derives from DB context, which is in System Data Entity, which is defined in entityframework.dll. And I'm then going to add a DB set for each of the models that I have in my application. So that means I can use the context to, you know, add a blog, delete a blog, or add a post and delete a post and perform any operations I want to. So I can go to Program CS now, and I can create a list of blogs. And so let's look at what this function does, create and print blogs. So what this function is doing is it news up a blogging context, and it creates a blog entry into the database, and then it saves that particular blog entry into the SQL Server itself. And then we sort of retrieve the list of blogs that was stored in the application. So if I launch this, so Entity Framework is going to pick up the DB context settings. By default, it's going to use a local DB instance, which is configured in my app config. So when I installed my Entity Framework package, it registered this instance of local DB as MS SQL local DB. Now, the reason it did that is because on my machine, I have VS 2013 and I have VS 2014 installed. And the version of LocalDB in these two versions of VS is different. So in VS 2013, the version was v11.0. And in VS 14, it's MS SQL LocalDB. So Entity Framework picks up the latest version that you have installed in your, on your machine. So this application ran, and then it created this blog entry, which we can go to the Server Explorer and connect to this particular database, MS SQL LocalDB. And this application database is going to be called console-app-37.blogging-context. So this is named after what my type is of my DB context. So that's another convention that EF6 has that you can overwrite in your application if you wanted to. So these are the tables, like, you know, these are the list of blogs that got created. And I can say show table data, which is going to show me the one blog entry that I created. So that's how you can get started with EF. Some of the common things that you can start doing is, let's say if you wanted to change the schema of this blog and you wanted to add a new rating property. So now you have to update your schema. And to do that, EF has a feature called Entity Framework Migrations. So you can drop down to the PowerShell and say enable migrations, which is going to create an initial seeding script for your database. So in this case, it's going to create a script on what my initial structure of my database looks like. You know, it has a block table, a post table, a comments table, and the block table has three fields. And then I'm going to use code-first migrations to update my schema to add the rating field that I just added to my blog POCO type. So when I ran this command, it dropped in a configuration file, which are the settings from my DB context, and it dropped this initial migration script. So if you run this script, it's going to create the database, and the state of the database is going to be what it is right now, where I have three tables, blogs, posts, and comments, and status as well. So if I add a migration saying rating, then EF is going to diff the model that I have and generate the scripts so that it can update the model to add the rating field for my application. So it generated this rating file, and it has two parts, up and down. Up means that when you're going from a previous version of the schema to a newer version of the schema, then, you know, add a rating field. If you're going from an upper version of the schema to a lower version, then you want to remove the rating column. So that's what the up and down functionalities are. So in my console, then if I do update database, EF is now going to commit these changes to the actual database itself. And then if I go to the database in the blogs table, I will see a new column. So if I refresh, I'll see this rating column itself. So now I've updated my schema of my application, you know, to be whatever I want it to be. And I can sort of go to this rapid development cycle where I can keep changing my schema in my C# classes, and using migrations, I can either update the schema to the newer version of the model or downgrade the schema to the older version of the model as well. So that's a quick overview of, you know, how you can get started with Entity Framework. There are a lot of conventions that you can override in your model, and I'm going to start showing you how you can sort of customize these conventions. So this was a scenario where I was starting new with an application. I'm going to open up a solution where I'm going to generate this code-first model from a database. And this is a scenario where in a lot of these cases, we are dealing with existing database that already have a SQL schema that are already set up. But there's a common request, like, how do I reverse engineer a code-first model with a database that I already have? Like, I don't want to start up completely fresh and target a new database, but I want to reuse my existing database and sort of follow the code-first paradigm in my application itself. So this is a site called Cycle Sales, where you can, this company is selling cycles. And they have a database where they have a listing of all the bikes that they have. And I'm going to add Entity Framework code first model from the database in their application. And so all of this tooling is inbuilt into Visual Studio. So I can say add. And I can say add new item. Go to data tab, go to data model, pick the name of the context as cycle context. And so if you notice, like, this is the new addition in 2013 where we have one consolidated tooling of creating your data model. And you can create your data model by either creating an EF designer, which would give you an EDMX style XML approach where you have a visual designer for your tables, and then you have an XML schema that maps it to the database and the POCO classes as well. You can create an empty EF designer, you can create an empty code-first model, or you can create a code-first model from an existing database. So I'm going to choose this last option. I'm going to say next. And I'm going to connect to my database, which I have locally on my machine. So I'm going to use connection string localdb/v11.0. And the name of the database is Cycle. So it's querying all the databases I have in my on my machine. Sometimes the LocalDB instance shuts down, so you have to connect it a few times before it wakes up. So let's give it a few seconds. Okay, so let's try again. Test connection worked. Let me launch this dialog again. I think I picked the wrong database. So it's localdb/v11.0. Perfect. So Cycle Sales is my database. I can click Next. And so this database has three tables, and you can either choose to scaffold, generate a code-first model for a single table, which is what you want to use in your application, or you can scaffold the entire database. It's your option. Usually we recommend sort of to pick and choose what tables you want to scaffold as code-first models, and then use them in your application. Since I only have four, I'm just going to scaffold everything. I'm going to say finish. So what this is going to do is it's going to generate all the POCO types for my tables. So one for bikes, one for customers, one for orders. And it's going to create a DB context for me, which is going to add all these DB sets. So this is the context that got generated. It has bikes, customers, orders. You know, if I go and look into bike, Then we'll see the bike takes a list of orders, a list of promotions. Here are some conventions. So if you notice that the primary key of this table is now called bike underscore ID. And I can annotate it using the key attribute. So I can choose how I want to signify whether a particular column is a primary key or not. In the first demo, I showed you a convention, a way of signifying whether this particular column is an ID or not. This name takes a string length of 200. This field is required. So you need to specify a value for this field, so on and so forth. You can also customize these conventions. So if I look at the cycle context, now that we are overriding this on model creating method, and this method is useful if you're not able to express your conventions through annotations. So for example, this is saying that the property model number is Unicode is false. So there's no data annotation that can describe this. So you can use this model called like Fluent API configuration for your entity framework, CodeFirst models itself. So now I'm going to show you how you can customize the CodeFirst model that was generated for you. And a few customizations that we can do is in this bike, you know, I'm generating a hash set of order lists. But let's say if I want to change it to, you know, a list of order lines and stuff. So what I can do is in my application, I have installed a NuGet package called entity framework code, entityframework.codetemplates.c#. Now, these are the T4 templates that get dropped into your project, which is what the entity framework designer uses to generate your DB context and your bike classes or your customer classes. And these T4 templates are very generic templates that can that you can use to customize what is the output that gets generated for these models itself. So let's change the hash set to list. And then I am going to make one more customization. So I'm just going to copy this. So go back to my T4 template. And then I'm going to replace these lines with the one that I just copied. So this is basically saying like if the relationship is a many relationship or not, and then if it is, then generate the either a list or a virtual, depending on its one to many or not. And so I'm going to save it, and I'm going to rerun the designer again. So one limitation of the designer that we have today is it does not overwrite or does not delete the files that are already there. So you have to forcefully delete these files and then run the designer again. So I can say add. So add new item. Let's talk about data model. Cycle context, choose from database. It remembers my connection string. So I can say next. I can select tables again. And so now it's going to generate all the files, the DB context. And if I go to the bikes table, you will see that instead of now hash set, I have list. If I scroll down, like, you know, I have a list of order lines and a list of promotions as well. So these are some customizations that you can do based on what your coding conventions are, what you care about in the generated artifacts. So another way of customizing the model is, you know, we talked about how do you represent a primary key. So we had, you know, bike, in the first example, we had blog ID as the primary key. Now we are annotating with the key attribute. But let's say I want to change this convention of what makes a particular column a primary key. We have a feature in EF6 now where you can have custom key conventions. So your key convention can derive from this class call convention. And then you can override the behavior by saying that, you know, sorry, not this one. Right. So where it's saying that if any declaring type name has ends with underscore ID, then configure it to be the primary key for your particular table. So this is another way you can customize on what your generated artifacts are going to be. And to use this convention in your DB context, you can register this convention in the on model creating event. So you can register it over here. A drawback of doing that is if you regenerate this model from the designer, then your changes are going to be overridden because it doesn't persist. It doesn't remember the previous changes. So you can, to have a more generic solution, then you can drop back to the T4 templates, and you can customize this behavior in the T4 templates as well. So I'm going to copy this snippet that I have. Go back to the T4 templates. Look for the section where we are generating the primary key for this particular entity. So over here. And what we are saying over here is, you know, if it's a primary key, then just write, you know, like bike underscore ID. Don't put the key attribute, is basically what we're doing over here. And the second thing that, we have to do is we have to register in the on model creating to register my key convention that I just wrote. So let us generate that code as well. So now I can go to my context T4 template, go to the place where I'm doing the on model creating, and add this line. So when we scaffold this DB context with all the types as well, it'll already have the custom key convention registered. And this was a feature that was added by one of the community members, where you can load the custom key conventions from an assembly in your application as well. So I'll just go and delete all the files, and I'll regenerate the model. Cycle context from database, go next, select tables, and then finish. Right. So in my context, now I have my my loader for my convention registered. And then if I go to my bikes table, you will see that I don't have the key attribute, and I just have bike ID. And then this everything will sort of continue to work. So this is a great way of, you know, how you can start with generating code first models from database, and then you can leverage the T4 templates to customize what the behavior of this designer should be. Like, and you can customize this to be whatever you want. If you want data annotations as a way to signify some configurations, then you can do that. Or you can use the Fluent APIs to sort of configure the model based on what you want to do. So let's just build this application, and let's just run it as well. I already have a bikes controller, which prints out all the listing of bikes that we have. And so you can imagine, like, this to be the public-facing site where a user can come and browse the catalog. So this is going to retrieve all the bikes for us. There are three bikes. One is called Toddler Terror Trainer. It's a very famous bike. It sells for $200. And there's also Mountain Monster 7000, if you like that. Anyhow. So if I go to my bike's controller, and if I look at my index action, you would see that I'm just querying, and I'm returning the list of bikes. With ES6, I can also use, with ES6 and MVC5, now I also can start using async and await in my controller actions. So I can, instead of doing toList, I can do toList async, which is a new feature in ES6, and I can await it. Build it, go back, refresh, you know, so that also works. So you can have, I have to mark that as async as well. So now you can start writing like async actions if you are in an MVC application or wherever you are, you can start using async await. And in the EF layer itself, you can do async operations. You can do toList async, you can do save changes async, in your application code as well. So let me undo these changes. So I'm going to show you how you can unit test this particular action as well. And in my solution, I have this unit test project. And I'm going to install a package called entityframework.testing.mock. So let me browse for it. So this is a package that is written by Rowan. It's not an official package by Microsoft, but it's a package that helps you, you mock the DB context for EF6 and helps you unit test your app. And like MVC controllers or your EF code more easily. So I'm going to install this package. Okay, let's fix our references. And I'm going to install this package again. And everything I'm showing you in NuGet packages is available online, so you can go download these packages as well. And I have links to the feeds in my slide deck as well. So I just installed this package. So I can now go into my bike's controller. I have some seed data over here where I'm creating three bikes. And let's create a mock of the DB context. So I'm going to create a mock DB set. So this will allow me to seed the data. It also sets up helpers so I can do like link queries on my mock object as well. So that's what the package entityframework.testing.mock does. Let's create our DB context. And now I want to have some logic where in my cycle sales business application, I want to make sure that when the controller returns the list of bikes, it returns the list of bikes where in an order where the highest priced bike is returned first and the lowest one is returned last. So I have this business logic that I'm going to unit test in my application. So I'm going to pass the context.object, and I'm going to build this application, and I'm going to right-click and say run test. So which is going to run this unit test that I have in my application. So I can go to the test explorer, and I can see the results of this test. So this particular test failed. If I look at the details on what happened, then we are seeing that you know expected 200, actual 50. So there looks like there's a bug in my controller action where it's not returning the right result. So I can go to my controller action. I can go to bikes controller. And it looks like I'm not sorting the result. So I need to sort it by descending order because my business logic was I want the highest priced item to be returned first. So I can just add this clause, build it, go back to the test runner, and say, run all. So it'll re-execute the unit test. And in this case, now it'll pass because now I have the right logic in my MVC application. So, this is a nice way of sort of start unit testing your entity framework code where you're returning a sort of list of results anywhere in your application. And the mock helper package sort of makes it easier for you to mock DB context, set up data, and set up link queries on your mock DB context itself. So this is all with EF6. We saw sort of how does the getting started look like with EF6. We saw how do we reverse engineer a code first model using the EF tooling, which is now integrated with Visual Studio. You no longer have to download the Power Tools as an out-of-band extension, and you have one unified tooling of creating models in the using the designer. So, okay. So that's what EF6 was about, and so let me introduce you with EF7. Have folks in the audience heard about EF7? Have folks heard about ASP.NET vNext? Okay. Good. So I'm going to be talking to you about, where are we heading with EF6? How should I think about it? What should I think about it? And I do recommend going for Scott Hunter's session tomorrow, where he's going to talk to you about what's coming in ASP.NET vNext. And it'll give you a nice theme of, where are we heading down with the stack. So if you look at EF6 in terms of what scenarios are supported, historically, we've been very good at supporting scenarios that are traditionally very server-oriented, where you're writing web applications or services running on the server. All you're writing client applications, which are traditional desktop applications, like using, for example, like WinForms. And historically, you've been dealing a lot with relational databases. So you've been dealing with SQL Server, relational models, and modeling your applications based on that paradigm. What we are looking for in EF7 is to enable these new set of scenarios which are becoming much more prominent right now. It is very common for us to see people building applications on phone, applications on store. Like, there are lots of people have tablets, so folks want to be able to write applications on these devices, and data is very critical for these applications. You want to write apps, and you want to store data locally to the application. If you have a game, like tic-tac-toe, and you want to keep the score, you should have a way of storing that data locally in your application itself. So that world is getting a lot more prominent right now. The other world that's very interesting is the world of non-relational data stores. There are a lot of people sort of building applications on a NoSQL paradigm. There are a lot of people building applications on different data providers, like, for example, MongoDB, RavenDB, Azure Table Storage, Redis, which are not traditionally relational, but they're interesting, and a lot of people find that to be very exciting. So for EF7, what we're trying to do is we are trying to target these scenarios as well. Like, we're trying to target a scenario where you can write a phone app and use EF7 to store your database. We are trying to target a scenario where you can use some of the features that you have in EF7 in non-relational stores. So, for example, the unit of work pattern that is in EF, it's something that you could use in a table storage. Our goal is not to hide or abstract away the implementations of Azure Table Storage, for example, but our goal is to make it easier to use those platforms itself. And the challenges that we have with our current code base is, EF has had a long history. Like, it started with the .NET framework, 3.5, which has been around for quite a long time. And as we evolve into this new world of, target phones, target stores, it's very hard for us to evolve on the current code base that we have. We have lots of legacy features. We have features which are not used much, but they make the code base go bigger. We have features which does not lead to very intuitive behavior. So for example, if you're in a web application and you have 2DB context which you're using to manipulate entries, sometimes you can get in a state where, you know, the EF change tracking mechanism fails for you, and then you're stuck wondering, like, what happened. So for most of these applications, like, we feel that, you know, some of these patterns might not apply, and it's time for us to look into these things. Another problem that we have today with our current code base is it's not optimized for low-density devices. Like, if you're running on a phone, you cannot afford to load up, like, you know, a 60 meg DLL, and I'm just making that number up. So we want to make sure that we reduce our footprint of our Entity Framework DLL in your application as well. And so what we're doing is we are coming up with sort of a lightweight, extensible version of EF. It'll have the features that you love, like it'll have code-first paradigms, it'll have DB context, DB sets, it'll have save, it'll have model creating, and it'll build on these model design paradigms, like, you know, DI is going to be very fundamental to EF, so you can inject your services into Entity Framework, like, how do I load my configuration? If you're running on a phone, your config is different. If you're running on a server, your config is different. So how do you switch in all these configuration environments? We are going to focus on code-first paradigm itself. So if you're using an app today which uses DB context, you know, migrations to EF 7 are going to be much more easier, because our principle is going to be that we're going to keep this design familiarity with EF 6 exactly the same. We are not going to invest in a sort of a micro ORM. Like, we are still going to have full support for Link. We're going to have full support for change tracking. We're going to have full support for unit of work pattern. And that's what EF is going to sort of focus on. And that's not going to change. And we're going to try to support relational and non-relational stores. And a critical point that I'll highlight for the non-relational stores is we're not going to put an abstraction that will hide away all the details for a table storage. An example being, if you are configuring a table storage provider, then you need to set a row key and a partition key. And EF will not take that, you know, requirement away from you. You'll have to set it. and it'll bring in some of these concepts like database created to all the providers itself. So database created is a concept that can apply to relational as well as to table storage as well, because you need to make sure that the database is created before you can do any operations on it. And so the key design principle that we have is to keep EF7 as much as possible the same as EF6. So whatever you've learned with EF6 stays the same. It does not change with EF7. If you're using DB context, you can still use it in your application. We also want to have a pay-per-play model where, you know, today, if you want to bring EF, you bring the entire EF framework into your application. You bring, which comprises of Entity Framework, like the core interfaces, the SQL Server implementation. But the scenario that we're going to enable is if you are in a phone app and you want to use SQLite, then you do not want to bring in the EF dependencies that talk to SQL Server, because you're not going to use it in your application. So you only bring in parts of the Entity Framework which you want to use in your application, and that's what pay-per-play means. It's going to be extensible. The core of EF is something that can be run anywhere, so it can target any platform, and the provider-specific details are going to be tied to a certain provider as well. So last part is driven by a lot of feedback that we've heard from EF. And a couple of things I'll point out over here is, if you notice in my first demo, I showed you that, you know, I created an application, I put a DB context, and I launched the application, and the database was created. So there was a lot of magic going on where, you know, what's my connection string? How do I configure my connection string? What server should I use? So EF has a lot of these assumptions that it makes, which sort of, I think the feedback that we've been hearing is, puts a lot of magic in front of the developer and doesn't help them understand what's happening. So in EF7, we're going to move away from having more magic. In a sense, we'll have less magic and more configuration. So what about ES6 apps? And should I migrate? How do I migrate? What do I do? The key message that you want to sort of keep in your mind is you don't have to upgrade. Where we are with EF7 is we are trying to figure out, like, what does EF7 look like? What is the APIs going to look like? What is the feature set going to look like? When we release EF7, we might not have all the features that you want, and you would still want to use EF6. We are still going to keep investing in EF6 in the same time. Like, we've already released 6.1, 6.1.1, 6.1.2. And in the parallel, we are working on ES7 as well. So both these trains are happening together, and we're going to keep investing in both of these trains. So you don't have to upgrade if you do not want to upgrade. Like, ES6 will still continue to work, and it will still continue to be supported as per the Microsoft support policies. So should you choose to upgrade, like, what that might look like is, it depends, because upgrading apps is always subjective. If you are writing an application which, for the most part, is using, you know, the DB context or the code first paradigm, it's using DB sets, it's performing add operations, migration for these apps is going to be easier because that's what we are carrying forward. If you have customizations in your application, so let's say you're using on model configuring quite a lot or using code first migrations quite a lot, it'll involve some changes in the application. And if you're sort of going back and if you're using object context, then migrations are going to be more involved. So you can think about the migration curve to be, if you're doing heavy customizations, you'll have to do more to migrate from EF6 to EF7. And right now, where we are is, we haven't quite yet figured out, like, how to tell people, like, what's the right way of migration. Like, when we release EF7, we might have some migration scripts or some migration tooling to help you migrate from EF6 to EF7, should you choose to migrate as well. So, and I'm being very frank over here is because this is where we are with the product, with EF7, and this is what we have to offer right now. A few months down the line, you know, we probably will have more information around it. So if you want to get involved in EF7, this is the, it's all open source. It's on GitHub. It's under the ASP.NET organization where all of the ASP.NET vNext project work is happening. There are nightly builds available, which is what I'm going to use in my demos to demonstrate some of the EF7 features. And so the two key pivots that we want to have with EF7 is we want to target new platforms. Like, we always were targeting the full .NET framework, both on a desktop and the server. But we want to target, like, Windows Phone. So you can use EF on a Windows Phone, on a Windows Store. You can use an ASP.NET vNext. You can target the full framework. You can target the core framework. You can target Macs. You can target Linux. So that's what we want to target with EF7 in terms of a platform support. And that's why it's very critical for us to evolve and to figure out, like, what does our EF7 surface looks like, because we want you to be able to write applications on all these platforms using Entity Framework. We also want to target all these stores. So we've done relational, but we want to target, you know, non-relational stores as well, Less Magic. And these are some of the examples of some of the providers that, you know, we are looking at. We're looking at SQL Server, SQLite, Azure Table Storage, Redis. We're looking at in-memory, which is going to improve unit testing of your applications quite a lot. So with that, let me start showing you some of the features in EF7. And to help me understand, or help you understand, how does it look like to use EF7, I enlisted help of my friend, Julie Lerman, who I just met yesterday. And we were just chatting about EF7, you know, where are we heading, what are people thinking about it. And she sort of requested to come up on the stage and help me figure out, how do I use EF7. So a big round for Julie Lerman. Like,
I just wanted to, is my mic on?
It's on.
I just wanted to make sure that I could do this. If I could do it, then you're okay.
So what we're going to do with Julie is, we are going to use the same application that we created when I started the demo. It's a blog application. It's using the same model. And we're going to upgrade this application to use EF7. And so you'll get an idea of what that would look like. So let's go ahead. I'm going to move to this side.
You can go over there so they know you're wearing pants.
What?
Just in case you're wondering.
Right. So let's. Our goal is to use the model that we have and create a new application with EF7. So that's the entire goal of this exercise.
So just take this.
Just take this, delete the migrations folder because we don't want to use it right now. You can enable migration in EF7 as well.
So does migrations work now with the bits?
Yes. With the new bits that we have with EF7, you can enable migrations as well.
I'm used to a touch screen.
And it's a touch screen, right. So let's upgrade the NuGet package from Entity Framework 6 to Entity Framework 7.
Okay. So update package, Entity Framework.
Wow.
Hey, where is it?
It's not yet shipped, so it's still in pre-release. So you need to have the hyphen pre tag.
Oh, yeah. I haven't used that in a while.
We are working very hard.
Living on the bleeding edge.
So what this is doing, it's pulling in Entity Framework 7, the core interfaces, the core dependencies. It's pulling in some of the packages from like ASP.NET VNX in terms of what the configuration would look like. And so that's why you're seeing a lot of packages getting installed.
What's going on?
And it's uninstalling 6.1.
Okay.
And so remember, like I told you that there's a pay-by-play model where you only bring in dependencies that you need. And so right now, we only brought in Entity Framework Core. And let's bring in Entity Framework SQL Server, because that's what we're going to use in our application. So do an install package of entityframework.sql server. And so now we have different kinds of stores that we want to bring in. So you can bring in SQL Server. Perfect.
I remembered the pre this time.
Yes, and we have not shipped it yet. So, and so this package now brings in its own set of dependencies that it needs to run this particular application. So it's going to add all the references.
So that's all the stuff I'm not going to have to put in my apps if I'm not using SQL Server.
Yes.
So there'll be a different one if I'm using SQLite.
SQLite, yes.
Yeah, I don't have to pay.
You don't
have
to pay for all of the framework.
Okay.
So now you can go to models and let's see what changes do we have to do. So if you notice now we have some compilation errors. Because this type is now going to come from a different namespace called Microsoft Data.
So instead of system.data.entity.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry, I use a different coding helper. I'm not used to getting to this little glyph here.
So this is what happens when you trade laptops.
So
you should never do it.
So is this going to get back to system data entity, or is it going to stay Microsoft because it's a PCL for NuGet?
It's Microsoft Data Entity. And so remember, like, our goal is to run on all platforms. And so it's a PCL which allows you to run EF everywhere.
And so I got to get rid of this.
You can get rid of number 4.
I'll just comment it out.
And let's see if the application builds.
See, I haven't had to use your weird backspace and deletes yet.
So at least it builds.
I don't need backspace and delete.
So let's now create a new database. So in our blogging context, let's specify a connection string. And so remember, like we said that.
Oops.
There is.
Your touch screen works a little different than mine.
So go to your blogging context.
Oh, it's in the model.
It's in the same file.
It's in the file. Is it on the top or on the bottom?
You are right there.
Oh, I was already there. Oh.
So to a new line after 15.
So am I going to do on model building like I usually do?
No, so now we have a new API call override on configuring. And so this is a place where you can configure what are the options for your DB context. So what does my connection string look like? You know, whatever options you want to put for your DB context, so you can put it over here. We have a snippet that we can use since I'm pretty sure nobody remembers the connection string format.
I've only been doing this for like 25 years.
Can you?
Do not ask me to code a connection string. I still can't do it.
We should have an app for it. So do S underscore SQL Server. No, S underscore EF7.
I see it.
SQL Server connection. Perfect. Tap, tap.
Tap, tap. Wait, now I got to use your weird backspace key.
Tap, tap. Yep, perfect.
Oh, yes.
So let's assign a unique ID to this database and call it like underscore two. So, you know, you can specify your connection string.
Wait, I did it again. I pressed the delete key instead. What is it?
It's
semicolon.
Right, okay. Perfect.
I know that much about connection strings at least.
So let's, shall we run this application and see what happens?
Do you trust me?
I trust you. Do you trust me?
Yeah, right. You're not going to make me look bad, right? You're the demo god today. Okay. Oh, I ran debug. Sorry, that'll take a little longer.
So now this is going to launch the console.exe. I have not changed my program CS still, so I have the same code where I was trying to create a blog entry.
It's creating the database.
It's now creating the database because it's the first run and the database doesn't exist yet. Exactly.
If the database already existed with that connection, with that information, would it say, oh, it's already there?
Yes.
Just like it does right now.
Correct.
Okay, cool. Did I do something wrong?
So an exception happened, and if we go over to our program CS, the reason this exception happened is because, remember, there's less magic in EF7? And so in EF6, when you access the context for the first time and it a query, EF would create the database for you and apply a default migration. In EF7, you have to explicitly create the database before you can access it. So you can do db.database. And so these are some of the newer APIs that we have. And if you do dot, so you have ensure created. Now, ensure created, we would normally recommend for you to use, like if you're quickly testing out something or unit testing something. We have newer APIs which do apply migrations, so you can start from a migration scenario as well. So this is going to create a database, so let's run it again.
Okay, this time control F5, and I remember where your weird F5 key is. It's a funny keyboard.
Right. So in this case,
funny American keyboard.
And error
happened. I broke it again.
Right.
Is this one you expected?
Yes.
Oh, shoot.
Let's, I think there's a conflict in the database connection, so let's up the initial catalog ID. So go to your
go back to the model.
Models.
Wait a minute. I know how to do this better than that. Okay.
And let's do database.
Where at?
So go up.
Into the context?
Line number 20.
Line 20. Okay, got it.
And say console app 30 underscore 2 underscore 1. Just put a few,
And why are we doing that?
Because we want to create a new database.
Okay.
And I think there was already a conflict.
Pointing to the other database.
Right.
Okay. Okay, save it, and then I'll control F5 it again. So you thought I was a ringer, right? Like that I'd done this a million times already? I haven't. So that's why it's like, if I can do this, you guys are good to go. Oh, something happened. It went away.
So we were debugging, but you saw this text come up like a blog created, and a blog entry was created, and the database was created as well. So that's how you can, you know, if you're sticking to the DB context model and you're using DB sets, you can sort of migrate from EF 6 to 7.
And this was a simple one, and the footprint of what I was using of Entity Framework 6 was simplistic enough that this went over easily.
Yes.
Right. Obviously, if I have more complexity in there, I'm going to have to do a little more work.
And that's where we'll figure out, like, what does that look like? I mean, right now, where we are, like, I mean, this is where we are at this particular moment in time.
That's fair enough. So it's familiar. So don't freak out. Don't panic.
Yep.
All right,
cool.
Am I done?
Thank you so
Excellent.
Much.
Excellent, thanks.
Big round for... So let's switch and start, see what an app would look like, what a Windows Phone app would look like which uses EF7. So this is an app which my favorite company, Cycle Sales, was using. Now, Cycle Sales wants to make some money, so they created this phone app. And as part of this phone app, they're going to create a game, and they're going to sell some advertisements in this app. So what this app does today, you know, it's a clicker where you can click a unicorn, and you can see how well you're doing in this particular game by clicking at the unicorn, like, you know, 10 times. So let's look at this game service. It's using an in-memory store. Like, it's basically storing in a list of games. So let the game be deployed. Let's play that game. So you can play, and you can see the top scores. As the unicorn comes up, you know, I have 5 seconds to click as much as I can. So I'm clicking, 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 clicking. And then it shows me this commercial saying, you're probably better at buying bicycles than playing games. So that's their strategy of making £1 million. But that's what they are. This app stores these top scores. And the problem with this app is it's storing all these top scores in an in-memory list. So as soon as I close this app or I redeploy, I lose all my top scores because they're not being persisted on a disk. They're being persisted in memory. So let's see how we can switch this app to use EF7 SQLite provider. So I'm going to right-click my solution, and I'm going to say Manage NuGet Packages, and I'm going to install SQLite provider for Entity Framework into my application, and I can track it both the Windows Phone and Windows Store. And so if you notice, I'm not bringing in any of the SQL Server dependencies, because in this app, I'm going to be using SQLite. So it's a pay-per-play model where I don't have to bring in the whole framework. My density goes down, and my footprint goes down in my particular application. So it's going to install these packages with all the dependencies, and this is my Poco, which is my game object. I'm going to create a new class where I'm going to create a game context. And I'm going to use SQL CE to store my information in a SQLite database. So let's call it game context. So this will derive from DB context. And so notice the familiarity in the programming model, like, and it'll have a DB set of game. Let's call it games. And then I have my on configuring. And I can configure the options, so I can specify my SQLite connection string. And so notice the pattern, like you were what we saw before, how do you did SQL Server, now I'm doing SQLite. And let's switch my game service to use my DB context. So instead of adding the games in memory, I am going to create a new game context. And I'm going to do db.games.add game. db.saveChanges. And then when I'm getting my list of games, I can do the same thing where I can new up the DB context. And I can do db.games and run the query. And then when my app starts, then I can create the database as well. Because remember, there's less magic, so you have more control over what happens. And so I can say var db equals new game context. And I can say db.database.ensure created. And if I redeploy my app, so it's going to deploy this app. Right, so the deployment has started. You know, the app's gonna launch up. It's gonna create the database. I can now play a game. Let's click, hopefully let's beat my record. Oh, 18, perfect. See top scores. You know, I have 18 clicks. If I redeploy my app by saying Control F5, I see top scores. You would see that my data is still there. So that's what you can start doing now with EF7. You can start building apps on phones, stores. You know, you can start building apps at a later point in time in sort of Macs and Linux. And this is our sort of multi-platform story. So the another demo that I wanted to show you was my Cycle Sales company now also has this internal app, which is a WinForm-based desktop application. And what they have in this particular application is, you know, if I, I'm using EF7. So they have a desktop client where they are seeing all their list of products. But they also have this warranty department where users can check their warranties and admins can see what bikes have what warranties and stuff. And the warranty information is something that they want to store in table storage because they want to have, they think that this database is going to go big and they want to have fast indexing / querying on table storage database itself. So I'm going to install a NuGet package in my application. It's called entityframework.azuretablestorage. So it's going to bring its own set of dependencies. Again, you know, I sort of pay the price of a plug-and-play model over here. And then what I can do is, in my warranty context, I can set the options, and I can say use table storage. And so these extension methods light up as soon as you download each provider. So SQLite has one, SQL Server has one, table storage has one, and you can sort of bring in into these applications. And then you can pass in the connection. And then I have to remember for table storage, I have to also specify what my primary key and partition key are. So I can add this snippet. Oops. So I can override the on model creating. And I can specify what is my partition key and the row key is going to be. In this case, it's what's my model ID and my serial number, because I think like this is the most queryable / indexable entry in my database. So I can build this application. I can launch it. And so this is a desktop client. Like, it's going to have three pages. I can do file, manage products. This is going to talk to the same SQL Server database I showed you in the web application. These are my three famous bikes. I also have my warranty lookup. So I can look up warranties by TTT200 and then say lookup. And it's going to look up, make a call into table storage. Since there was no entry found, I can add a new warranty for this bike, test bike. You know, save it. This is going to save in table storage. And we can quickly go and see what the table storage contents look like. So this is my table. And so I just created this row called test bike. So I just stored this data in table storage as well. So this is what you can do with EF as well. Like, table storage is one of the providers. And the last demo that I wanted to show you was how can you unit test this particular application. And I'm going to use a store called in-memory store for Entity Framework. So let's download this entityframework.inmemory package, install it both in my application and in my unit test project. Close it. And so what I can do in my cycle style context is I can add a new constructor, which is going to configure my context. And I can optionally pass in the SQL Server store, or I can pass in the in-memory store. So I can say if underscore like use in-memory, then I can say options dot use in-memory store. So this is the new package that I added. So I get one more extension method. Else use the SQL Server store, and I can build it. And then I can go back to my unit test project. I can new up the DB context. So I can new cycle context. Well, the app is already running, so let's just kill it. And I can say true. And this is going to create the DB context and use the in-memory store rather than the SQL Server store. And I can now add some test data. So this is going to add some test data. It's going to save changes, which is going to save to the in-memory store of EF. Let's put some logic that you want to test. So this is the price service that I want to test in my application. And in particular, I want to check for this particular method to see if my calculations are happening correctly for converting prices from one currency to the other. And then I'm going to quickly assert it. So now if I build it, I run my test. So it's going to create a context, use the in-memory representation of the store, do save changes, run the test. You know, the test passes. So your unit testing experience with ES7 gets a lot much better because you don't have to mock the entire DB context, because we'll give you an in-memory store to test it out against, basically. Are there any questions? So there's some related talks on this subject, like there's an ASP identity talk that I'm going to give tomorrow. Julie's going to give a talk on EF on Friday. Scott Hunter is going to talk about ASP.NET VNX tomorrow. You can find me at Ask the Experts tomorrow. I'll be at the booth in the Developer Platforms and Tools booth as well. I'm going to be hanging around after this talk if you have any questions. And here are some resources. There's a team blog where we have a lot of information or documentation online. The EF6 CodePlex project, where the EF6 source code is open. Here's the EF7 project, where the EF7 source code is there. You can get nightly builds of EF7 and try it out. Everything I showed you is off the nightly feed itself. here's some official resources. And please do complete this eval form. It helps us sort of figure out how the talk went. Thank you so much for hanging around, and have a